We're listening to KURU 89.1, and this is Interconnect, and I'm talking with Wildcat right now. We've been talking about regenerative ecology and why it's important for healing our relationship with our Earth. Wildcat, I wanted to ask, what types of relationships with Earth do people have that can be transformed into regenerative practices?
You know, the common ones that I think of are horticulture, grazing practices. We talk about wildland restoration, wetland restoration are two common themes here in the desert. And then food forestry is the one I'm really interested in. That's, to me, I think the most important area and where we have to go as a species if we want to survive this extinction event.
So if someone has a backyard that they have a garden in, what are some things that they could do to create more regenerative practices?
The short of it, one of the most important things is no-till. You know, the NASA satellite imagery shows every year that when North America tills in the spring, the carbon levels on the whole planet go up, the CO2 levels go up tremendously, and that's a huge deal. So if we just stop tilling, that's the most important thing. But that's one of the most important things. Stop tilling. Natural fertilization. All fertilizers are salts. If it's, it says, or if you buy it as a product and it says any type of fertilizer, it's a salt. You know, even the organic fertilizers, they kill soil biology. Organic fertilizers kill soil biology the way the inorganic ones do, unless you go very, 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 very light, like, you know, 1/20th, 1/40th strength, or 1/100th strength, or something like that. Mulch, if it's a small garden, if you have the capacity, there's free wood chips, power companies, tree services, there's other places too. There's a lot of free wood chips. Mulching is very important. We're always moving towards super biodiverse polyculture. And that means, you know, 220 species on an acre, not three. You know, Three Sisters is a wonderful technology for some really interesting reasons. The most amazing thing is that it's a grass, a forb, and a legume. And it's very important to have representatives of grasses, forbs, and legumes when you're starting out and repairing land, especially if you're in like desert or grassland or something. You really want to have those there. And so another example of technology, sustained regenerative ecology technology that our indigenous ancestors left us is that Three Sisters model. So it's really beautiful, a grass, a forb, and a legume.
Which is corn, beans, and squash. And just in case you haven't heard of the Three Sisters, mm-hmm. the Three Sisters are the corn, beans, and squash growing together.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. And so it's a beautiful technology that's packaged in that very simple technique. But Three Sisters is more close to monocropping than it is to super biodiverse polyculture. We're really aiming for, you know, 200 plus, and not just foods and fibers and fuels and medicines for human beings, but foods for a lot of other species too. A lot of species that you can't use and your family can't use, but all the other beings can. And then a lot of other beings can. And then a lot of other beings can take advantage of, the eating and the pooping and the life and everything else. From that, and so it just the benefits radiate outwards when we share. Sharing is a part. Stop fighting mice and snails and early successional species. Most of those plants that we think of as weeds are more nutrient dense than the plants we're trying to grow next to them, and have medicinal properties, and they want to grow right there. Stop fighting them. Take advantage of those wonderful foods and medicines that are the immune system response of Mother Earth. It's helping rebuild that soil. Leave that carbon there. If you're going to compost, learn how to do it properly so that you can make a good inoculant source, so you can have the specific fungi and bacteria and protozoa and nematodes that you want that are going to benefit you, and learn who they are and how they're going to benefit you. Elaine Ingham can teach you that. That's real science. If you don't want to learn real science, a simple way to do is to learn the Johnson-Suh composting method. And they have a really fancy name. They call it Johnson-Suh Bioreactor. But learn that. That's a wonderful technology for making wonderful inoculant source. And then you can just make a slurry of that, real simple. Just mix it in water. Don't leave it more than a couple minutes, because those are aerobic organisms that want to breathe oxygen. But just mix it with water, spread it over your garden. So the mulch is for a lot of reasons, and I won't go into all that today, but you want full ground cover. And we start with mulch, but then we're moving towards full photosynthetic ground cover, which means plants like leaves covering the earth is what we're aiming for.
So if you've moved from not doing those practices that you mentioned, and you have a garden and you still want to even take it a step further, what What does it look like to begin to be a food forester?
Oh, great question. Food forestry, first of all, I just want to speak to how important food forestry is. That's really our only hope as a species. You know, with cows did not suddenly just magically become detrimental to Mother Earth. They weren't always detrimental to Mother Earth. There's nothing inherently detrimental about a cow to Mother Earth. It's when we started forcing them to behave in unnatural ways that the impact of their behavior, the biological, physical, and chemical impact of their behavior became detrimental. Their natural behavior is beneficial to Mother Earth because we all the animals co-evolved in these ecological systems with our behaviors. Our behaviors were an integral part of the co-evolution of these systems. And so when our behaviors move from natural to unnatural, and natural in the sense of what those behaviors were for the last 99.999% of evolution, when we move away from what those behaviors were to new behaviors, and natural and unnatural, even it sounds loaded. I don't even know that those are the correct words. But when we move from what those behaviors were for 99.999% of the time to new behaviors, now all of a sudden the behaviors are destructive. So humans are not inherently destructive to Mother Earth. We're a part of, we are children of this planet. We're all indigenous to this planet. When our behaviors changed from foraging, because we are a foraging species, and moved into horticulture and shepherding and ranching and stuff like that, then our impact became detrimental. There are intelligent ways to do horticulture to where we're not so detrimental. They're very intelligent, thousands of years old sciences in Mesoamerica of how to do food forestry in a way that's super beneficial to human beings, that's very sustainable, that can promote huge biodiversity amongst other animal, bacteria, fungi, plant populations. And so we can be intelligent about how we do what we do. We don't have to be detrimental. And so food forestry, we're a foraging species. Like regenerative grazing makes cows behave more like what they would behave in a natural system, and their impact ecologically goes from very destructive to way less destructive, and ecology can begin to recover, but you sort of hit a glass ceiling somewhere around grassland, which makes sense because they're, you know, that's probably the type of ecology they're coming from. When humans move from all of our crazy behaviors back to food forestry, back to foraging, we can become very beneficial to the ecologies of the planet again. And so that's really what we're all aiming for as a species now, if we want to survive this extinction event. And if we want personal health, family health, resilience of the ecologies we live in, if we want to see beauty and biodiversity around us, if we want healthy communities, food forestry is how we're going to do that. And so food forestry, if people don't know, it took me a long time to understand, we're basically just talking about perennial gardens. So instead of planting annual crops that are just going to live 1 year and then you have to replant and replant and do all that work. And if anybody who's ever farmed, you know that that is insane amounts of work. That's not natural. It's not healthy to work that hard that much. It's not natural. It doesn't feel good. It's not great. I mean, there's a lot of reward to it, and there are a lot of parts of that that do feel good, and then doing regenerative horticulture definitely has a lot of rewards to it. But our nature is to sit around and just eat and enjoy song and dance and love and partnership and play and swimming and napping under trees. Like, that's our nature. And so food forestry allows us to do that. When you plant perennial gardens, after some years, you have these plants that just produce food every year for free, and then they're doing that regenerative ecology work for you, especially vines, shrubs, and trees start producing all this lignin, which feeds saprophytic fungi and start making humic substances at the earth's surface. You start building soil. Trees, vines, and shrubs do that for you. They just start building soil. And so water, the earth holds more water. These plants, all of a sudden, after a while, you don't even have to really water much anymore. You have these giant trees, shrubs, and vines that just bear food for free every year, and you don't have to do any work. How nice does that sound? And then at the same time, they're building soil at the surface to where smaller grasses, forbs, legumes, other types of things, all of a sudden all these fungi species, these very important, powerful medicines and foods, these fungi, all these mushroom species start appearing. A huge biodiversity influx of animals. If you eat animals, you have so much more to choose from in a food forest than you do on even a regenerative farm. There's really every reason in the world to do it, and we sequester a ton of carbon. We increase the nutrient densities of foods tremendously. I'm really a huge proponent of food forestry. I really recommend, and you can do it with just whatever little piece, your front yard, your backyard.
Yeah, I just want to share on that note that, you know, each place that you're in wants to have a different kind of food forest planted. And so just really learning about, you know, even here in Grant County, like from Gila to the Mimbres Valley to Pinos Altos to Silver City, like all of those places have different plants that are going to do really well in a food forest. Mm-hmm. And so finding out which plants are the ones that will do well in your part of our region and planting those things and just trying to really like imagine where you are and how it could become a multi-layered food forest. And then not just imagine it, but plant the seeds or plant the starts or... and even taking cuttings of plants and putting them in water and trying to get them to root, you know, it's like the earth wants to regenerate and these plants want to grow. And if we just help them a little bit, they do it even better than they're already doing it just on their own, or they can anyway. But I just want to share that in Silver City here, the home that I lived in until this year when I moved and that I own and hopefully will become a healing center for our community. It's called Motherland, and there's a food forest that Elizabeth Foster started there. And in this half an acre, maybe not even half an acre plot, there's 6 almond trees and a huge apricot tree and 2 apple trees and a plum tree and Nanking cherry shrubs and a peach tree and quince bushes and all kinds of medicines that are the more like plant and ground covering plants. And there's just literally like any time of year that I walk into the garden, there's an abundance of something that wants to be harvested and used by us and to be in relationship with us. And I just feel grateful to Elizabeth every day that she started that legacy that I get to keep taking care of and tending to. And if we keep doing what Elizabeth Foster did with all of our yards, then our future generations are going to continue to have the kind of abundance that I'm blessed with because of that thinking, that kind of thinking. So thanks, Elizabeth, if you're listening.
Wow, thank you, Elizabeth.
And thank you so much, Wildcat.
Thank you, Kristen. I appreciate the opportunity to talk. It's been really pleasant for me.
You've been listening to an interview with Wildcat, a regenerative ecologist who believes that land stewardship can change our relationship with the earth. I'm Kristen Lundgren, and this is Interconnect, one of Kindred Continuum's shows. I'll be airing the first Monday of the month from here on out, and I'm so grateful for your listening ears and your open hearts. Thank you so much, Kuru 89.1. Thanks for supporting listeners, and we'll see you next time.